Well, today we do conclude this series that we've called Different. And the challenge in this series has been to come to terms with the idea that as a result of us being Christians, as a result of our faith, we should be doing life differently than how the world does life. We are called to be people who love when we are justified to hate. We are people that are called to forgive someone even though the world would say we are justified for retribution. We need to be different than what we see around us. And as a result of our faith, we should be different. And it is a challenge because we're in a world that does not value that difference. In fact, that affront to us being different is what you would call persecution. Now, I want to today to talk about persecution, and I want to try and do this as honestly as I can, realizing that the persecution that we experience is very different from other types of persecution. Persecution comes in all different kinds of ways and severity. Certainly the people that Peter was writing to that we've been studying went through the kind of persecution that their lives were taken. Here in America, we don't see that kind of persecution. But in the world today, we do see that kind of persecution. There is a kind of persecution in the world today that matches and sometimes even exceeds the kinds of things that were going on with the Christians that Peter was writing to in his day. In fact, current data suggests that the persecuted Christians today, that the level of persecution is at the highest level it's been in the history of Christianity, since even the days of Peter, that more Christians are being persecuted at a more severe level than at any other time in history. Last year, over 100,000 Christians were martyred, were killed because of their faith. Hundreds and thousands more were beaten, abused, maimed because of their faith. Christianity has always been persecuted. From the beginning, in every culture, every scene, Christianity has been persecuted. It seems to follow it. It seems to be a mark of Christianity because Christianity threatens power structures. You see, Christianity loves in the face of hate, and it has transformed people, it's transformed cultures, and it's transformed governments. Power structures get challenged, and as a result of that, Christianity can become illegal at worst or be bullied at best. So even though we are not being killed for our faith, we live in a culture that pressures us, that persecutes us to abandon our Christian faith. Jesus told us to expect this persecution. Varying degrees, but persecution nonetheless, that as followers of his, that we should expect it. In fact, in John chapter 15, verse 18, he says these words. He said, "If the world hates you, remember that it hated me first. And since they persecuted me, naturally, they will persecute you." I mean, it's kind of a good news, bad news thing. But the idea is that if you're a follower of Jesus and they're persecuting Jesus, naturally, you would find yourself also being persecuted. Now, remember, the Christians that Peter is talking about are being killed for their faith. And certainly in America, we're not seeing that persecution, though we see it in parts of our world. For us, persecution may mean something like you are passed over for a promotion. Or persecution for us might mean that you are not able to get a certain job that other people are able to get, whether they would identify or let you would find out that that is the reason. Those are realities that people experience. You may be excluded from particular social gatherings or gatherings of people. You might end up being an outcast at the water cooler because you're not listening to the latest music that some kind of who knows what it might be, or you didn't watch last night's Game of Thrones, so you're out of the loop when it comes to these kinds of social interactions. So in America, you can be an outcast or you can lose opportunities because of your faith. And the pressure that we feel to be included or the pressure that we feel to not lose out on opportunities can become a persecution that obviously is significantly less than loss of life and limb, but no less, it is persecution and it's something that we have to deal with. Each one of us will find ourselves in a form of persecution as a result of our faith and our faith journey. And in 1 Peter chapter 4, verse 12, Peter has these words to say. He says, "Dear friends, don't be surprised at the fiery trials you're going through, as if something strange were happening to you." Don't be surprised. It isn't just some strange thing. Because remember, Jesus said, you shouldn't be surprised, because if they persecuted him, they're going to persecute us. Peter's pretty much saying the same thing here. In fact, here's a truth that whether you like it or not, is true. And if you're following on page 5 of your program, this would be your first fill-in. It's that if you are living boldly for Jesus, you will be oppressed. If you're living boldly for your faith, boldly for Christ, you're going to find yourself being oppressed. And what I fear this morning is I fear that some of you, as I say that, would think in your own minds, you know, I don't think I see any oppression in my life. I don't think my faith has ever resulted in oppression. Like, maybe it happens for others. I get how it might happen, but I've never experienced any oppression as a result of my faith. Reminds me of back in my high school days. When I was a junior in high school, the coach of the football team came up to me and said that he wanted me to go out for football. I didn't play football before that. In fact, my freshman and sophomore year, I was in plays, musicals. I sang, I danced. That's who I was. And the football coach came and said, "I kind of think your physique is different than that. And I want you to try out for football." Now, this is a championship team. This isn't like just some small school, and I was intimidated. But he believed in me, so I decided to go out for football. And I realized that God had given me some gift for running people over. So I enjoyed playing football, but I never could really put my heart all the way into it. I don't know if it was I was afraid at the time. It was kind of a newer experience for me. But I made the team. But as we were playing games, I found myself sitting on the bench. The guy that was a senior was in that defensive line spot that I was trying to get some playing time in. In fact, every week we would have these drills where we would battle against one another, and whoever came out on top got to start. I mean, it was really competitive, and I would lose out. And so I sat on the bench just, you know, hoping that the guy that was playing my position would, you know, break an arm or dislocate something, and I'd get to play. Happened occasionally, but not often. We would win game after game after game. We were winning our games. And the more we were winning the games, the more people started talking about our team becoming a championship team again, and I became more nervous that I might get put in the game. So I watched from the sidelines. I was a member of the team. Positionally on the team, I was a member, but I wasn't really contributing to it. I wasn't participating in it. I went to practices. I practiced hard, but I wasn't playing. And one day, my position coach, his name was Tom Deal, he came up to me and he said, "Doug, you should be starting." He said, you have more skill, you are better, you're bigger, you're stronger, you could win this position, but you just need to try harder." I believed him, and I did, I tried harder. And as a result, I did get to start playing in a few games. And it went pretty well for me. And by mid-season, getting to the latter part of the season, I was playing in every single game. And when we finally made it to the championship, I got to play in the championship game. And I can remember afterwards the coach coming up to me and he says, "Isn't it better to have contributed than just participated?" And he was right. There was something that was richer about that championship game because I played in the game instead of just watch it from the sidelines. Now, if I never would have gotten into the game, if I would have just continued to sit on the bench, when it's all said and done, I would have had a championship ring. But it would have been a participation, like it would have been just because of my position there, not because I participated in the actual game itself. I think for some of us as Christians, we have this idea that our Christianity is about the practice and it's about being a part of the team, but it's not really being in the game. When we come to church, that's great. We read our Bible, that's great. We pray, that's great. We're in a small group, that's great. But when that's the comfort of these walls, that's the comfort of the walls in your home. But when it comes to going outside of that, to the outside world, where the game really is, I mean, the whole point of all these other things we do is to ready us for the real world and the real experiences that are out there. But out there, many of us don't play that game. We just sit on the bench. And we are Christians because we're a part of it, but we're not Christians in the way that we're not participating in it. We are a part of the group, but we're not in the game. And I fear that that's why some people might say, I've never experienced any oppression as a result of my faith. It's just possibly you may not be in the game. You know, when we're not in the game, Satan takes very little notice of us. He doesn't need to oppress us because we don't need oppressing. But I promise you this, that if you start to live out your faith, if you start to go into the world and you start actually praying for people out there, when you hear your coworkers and struggles they might be going through, or friends or neighbors you have, and you say, I'll pray for you, that's putting your faith out there. That's taking a risk. And when you do that, you start to play the game. When you start talking about how God has helped you and what God means in your life, when someone tells you about a question they have or a struggle that they're having, you talk about how God helped you through something. Just by mentioning God in that conversation, it's putting your faith out there. It's joining in the game. It makes us uncomfortable at times. Some of us have never invited someone to church. Church may make a huge impact in your life. It may be helping you in your direction. It may be helping you in so many different ways. But we're silent about that outside of this place. But we're very willing to tell someone about a restaurant we went to that's great that they should attend. A restaurant that they should go to because they'll really like it. But when it comes to a church that's making an impact in our life, we're very hesitant to share that with someone where they may need it or may be beneficial to them. And if we're not serving as either like things like reading buddies or mission trips or things outside the comfort of the walls of the church, then Satan takes no notice and he doesn't oppress you because you need no oppressing. But if you live out your faith, I promise you, you will be oppressed because Satan will take notice because you're going to start taking some wins out of his column. The world is a battleground between love and hate. And if you go into battle, don't be surprised that there will be some fiery trials along the way. Don't be surprised that if you decide to get into the game and start doing this out in the world around you, that there are some friends that may make fun of you. It's true. It's true that your boyfriend may break up with you when you tell him you're no longer going to sleep with him. It's true you may not get invited to those parties anymore because you're a killjoy. It's true that your family may shun you. It's true that coworkers may avoid you. Even if you're at college or university, it's true that a professor may publicly make fun of you for what you believe in. But Peter says in 1 Peter chapter 4, verses 12 and 13, dear friends, don't be surprised at the fiery trials that you're going through as if something strange were happening to you. And he goes on to say, instead, be very glad. Remember what these Christians are going through. They're being killed for their faith. And Peter is saying that when these things are happening, be very glad. And he tells you why. He says, for these trials make you partners with Christ in his suffering, so that you will have the wonderful joy of seeing the glory when it is revealed to all the world. Be glad because you're now in the game. Be glad because you're now with Christ. You join with him in his suffering. You become a part of this team, actively doing something instead of just coming to practices and sitting on the bench week in and week out. Our culture is really against us getting into the game. We live in the Midwest, and there's something very, very alive here in the Midwest that if you didn't grow up here and you've moved into this area, you notice it right off the bat. For those of you that have been here all your life, you've probably heard of it, and you probably don't even believe it's really true, but it is. There's something here called Midwest nice. Midwest nice, if I were to define it to someone that was trying to understand what it is, I would say Midwest nice is the value of comfort over discomfort. That we would rather have a pleasant conversation with one another than any conversation that might have discomfort or even confrontation. That Midwest nice is that we would rather go with the flow than cause a problem for our friends or for our family or for our coworkers. Midwest nice is we would rather let something slide than challenge someone to think differently than the things that come out of their mouth. We pursue comfort at almost all costs. There's a danger to Midwest nice, is that we can start to compromise. You see, if you go out with your friends and they're at a bar and they have a drink and they're saying, hey, why don't you have a drink? You're like, okay, even though you maybe wouldn't want to or you weren't planning to, but you say, okay. And then one turns into two or into three. And then all of a sudden, this compromise all of a sudden weighs on you, because if an opportunity comes to talk about your faith or to share your faith at that time or even in the days to come, you'll be reminded that you kind of fell into the same thing they were doing, and you'll feel like a hypocrite if you say anything about your faith, and you actually start to feel like you need to hide your faith. Conceal your Christianity for the sake of protecting Christianity from your behaviors. Not only do you not share, but you actually conceal it. This can happen in any venue, at work. And all it takes is one thing, and that thing is in our mind forever. I can't ever share my faith or let people know I'm a Christian because they'll know these other things that I did. Yeah, that's true. And yeah, you might make mistakes, and you're going to make others. And every single Christian that's ever lived on this earth, aside from Jesus Christ himself, is a hypocrite. None of us are perfect. All of us say we want to do something, we don't. I mean, how many people say they're going to start a diet on Monday, Christians and non-Christians alike? Does that mean that you don't try again on Monday? No. It's our best intentions. We strive, we struggle, we find new ways to challenge ourselves, to motivate ourselves. And on our faith, it's the same way. You're going to do well, and there's times that you're not going to do well, but those aren't reasons to not share your faith. In fact, even more so, it's to say I'm a real person, and I struggle, and I have mistakes, and I fail, and I get back up, and I try again. People can relate to that. They can't relate to your perfection that sometimes they believe and that we communicate you have to have. Someone says a racist or a sexist joke, and you laugh. Someone makes fun of someone, and you don't defend them. You don't stand up for that person. I mean, you don't want things to get uncomfortable, right? And soon you're having to hide your faith, and your faith weakens. Soon there's nothing different between the way you live and your choices and the world. And I fear there's just too many Christians that are living this life, and there is no opposition out there because it looks the same. And we talk that this is the game. This isn't the game, folks. This is practice. The game is out there. And we're getting beat every single time we go out. Look, there's a couple different ways we can do our lives. And if the goal is comfort, it might look a little bit like this diagram. If we pursue comfort, and that becomes the way that we focus, that's how we run our lives, that's the job choices we make, our family choices, comfort emotionally, materialistically, whatever it might be. If comfort is the goal, you're going to avoid opposition because opposition is not comfortable. No conflict. And if we avoid opposition, our faith weakens because we compromise. Because we don't live out the things that we believe, because we don't want to create any tension. And when that happens, we find an emptiness in our life. And we lose our purpose, we lose our significance, we lose our meaning. Why God put us here in the first place. And when we start to feel depressed and we start to feel like, I don't know why I'm here and everything's a mess around me, we just say, I just need to feel comfortable, and we pursue comfort again in different ways. Comfort, avoid opposition, our faith weakens, life's empty, so we pursue more comfort. I want you to know there's a different way to live. Different. That's what this series has been about, and that's to live boldly. Because see, if you live boldly, you're going to face opposition. And when you do, you're going to stand up under it. Now, this does not mean, please listen to this, this does not mean getting on a soapbox and beating people over the head because they don't believe and think like you believe when it comes to your faith. There's very little you could do that would harm Christianity more than Christians going out and beating people up because of their faith. This is your own convictions, living your life the way you're convicted to do, and not beating people up because they're not living that way. But when you stand up for what you believe within yourself, and you choose not to do something, or you choose to do something because of your faith will strengthen. And as your faith strengthens, you'll grow closer to Christ. And as you grow closer to Christ, you feel confidence to live more boldly. And as you do that, you will face more opposition. As you persevere through that, your faith will continue to strengthen. And so as you think of these two models, the question is, which of these diagrams represents your life? Because one, you'll have opposition out there, and the other, you'll have none. It's true that when you live differently, you will not always get along with the world. Peter said that. Jesus said that. Paul says that. It's true that the world will reject you in some ways. It's true the world will ostracize you, that it will persecute you. But Peter tells us that it makes us partners with Christ. We identify with Christ himself. If I were to boil Peter down to the best verse that I think is in the entire book of 1 Peter. Nobody asked me, but I'm going to tell you what I think it is. It's 1 Peter 4:19. It says these words. It says, so if you are suffering in a manner that pleases God, catch that. So if you are suffering in a manner that pleases God, living out your faith, keep on doing what is right and trust your lives to the God who created you, for he will never fail you. You can trust him when you surrender yourself to him. You're going to go through trials and difficult times and keep doing what's right. Which reminds me of a kind of a guiding principle in my life that has been with me for many years now. This guiding principle isn't something that was presented to me and I grabbed a hold of it. It's the way that I have learned to live my life as a result of the reading of scriptures and really how I see Jesus interacting with people. And if you ask the people in my life that are closest to me, I would venture to guess that they would all agree that this is a guiding principle in my life. From Pastor Brian to the elders here at Hillcrest, my wife, even my kids, I think, could identify this as a guiding principle. They'd say, oh yeah, that's my dad. Family, friends that I have, they would identify this. But this guiding principle has caused suffering in my life. I would be more comfortable without this guiding principle that I have. My life would be more comfortable, but not more on track with where God would want me to be. In fact, there are times when I feel this well up inside me and I realize I'm at a crossroad and I realize that the next moments have the potential to be very painful in my life. This is what it is. It's your next fill-in as well. Do what is right and trust God with the results. Just do what you know is right for the sake of it being right and let God work out the rest of the details. You see, it's usually those what happens next makes us compromise on doing the right thing. Well, you have to do the right thing because it's the right thing. And even though it could have negative consequences or negative effects on us, we still have to do the right thing because it's the right thing. And I've lost friends over this guiding principle. I've lost church members. I've lost friends. I've lost staff members. I've even lost elders here at Hillcrest over this. But I've also seen lives saved. I've seen people fall in love with Jesus over this principle. And I believe I have seen health and that Hillcrest is healthier as a result of this guiding principle. You see, persecution strengthens my life. I'm not afraid for Satan to hear me say that I am not afraid of persecution. Because when I'm persecuted, my faith strengthens. In fact, persecution never even hurts the church. In fact, throughout history, every time there's been persecution against the church, she has grown stronger. And in some weird, sick, twisted way, I truly do not fear persecution. I welcome it because I know the good that can come from persecution in my life and in our Christian faith. So which of these identifies or most represents you? As Peter wraps up this letter that we call 1 Peter, he has some encouraging words for those of us that are playing the game and wondering what the prize is or what the reward is in all of this. 1 Peter 5:5-7 says, God oppresses the proud but favors the humble. So humble yourselves under the mighty power of God, and at the right time he will lift you up in honor. Give all your worries and cares to God, for he cares about you. You and I can let go of our need and our desire to be vindicated. We can let go of our need and our right to be understood by those unwilling to understand us. You can stop trying to right all the wrongs and trust that when you do what is right, that God will take care of the rest. And the day will come, ladies and gentlemen, when you will be honored by God for what you have done well. That day will come for each of us. So the encouragement is to give it to God, because he will care for you. We are going to suffer. I wish I could tell you that we're not going to, but we are. As we take a stand in our faith, that suffering will become even more commonplace in our lives. And so Peter had these very final words to say. Verses 10 and 11 of chapter 5. So when you have suffered a little while, he will restore, support, and strengthen you. And he will place you on a firm foundation. All power to him forever. Amen. You see, when you decide to get into the game, you will have times and periods of suffering and discomfort. And rest assured that this at least means that, yes, you are in the game. Welcome to the game. Because there is no more significant event that I think you could give your life to, your energy and your passions. And you will experience spiritual oppression. But at that moment, God will restore you. And he will support you. And he will strengthen you. You see, as you live differently, you're going to discover God's faithfulness. If you don't live differently, it's hard to find it. But as you choose to live differently than the world, you will discover God's faithfulness. He will never leave you. His promise, he will never abandon you. God is good. God will remember you. You are his. You are holy. You are set apart for a special purpose, a special reason. You are not here by chance, but you're here because God has called you. He has a glorious work he wants to do in you and through you. And that purpose he will see complete in you. Nothing in this world can take that away. He says nothing can take you from his hand. Because in your weakness, he is strong. You see, our God is good because he gave us Jesus. This is the hope that I have. This is what I stake it all on, is Jesus. Not the Jesus that some people try to pitch. Not the Jesus that's on the protest signs. Not the Jesus that somebody's peddling on the street corner. I mean, the Son of God. Jesus himself. And when the dust settles and the kingdoms of this world have all been built, and when all the lies have been told to advance abuse, and when it's doled out to feed its lust, and when the moth and the rust have had their way, I'll have Jesus. Some will tell me, and I've heard it said, that I'm either a holy roller. Some tell me I'm out of touch because I don't watch this show or that show. My kids tell me often I'm uncool. But I have Jesus. I don't know if or when things will change here in America, but persecution comes, and it comes in all different forms. But light or severe, I will wear it. Because I will identify with Jesus in that suffering. And so if it comes to that point and they break my bones, or they tear my flesh, or they spit in my face, or if they demand that I reject my convictions of faith, even if they strip my soul from my body and take my body and drag it down Main Street, I'll have Jesus. And that's more than enough for me. I invite you to the game. Something so much more significant than what the world is promising you. And as we close with this song, Jacob's going to sing a song called Give Me Jesus. And in those moments, as we sing this song, make it your prayer. And if you're at a point right now where you say, you know what, I want to join this game, for whatever reason, however that looks in your life, whatever you've not done or needed to do, or maybe you need to make a commitment that you haven't made before, or it's a recommitment of something. I don't know what it might be, but I want to offer something bold for you, and that is for you to come and to pray at these steps and just say, okay, God, this is it, like for real. I'm going to come. I'm going to actually walk up here. I'm going to kneel here, and I'm going to pray. Give me strength to play this game, to go out there and to actually live it the way that you've called me to live it. No one's going to judge you. Oh, who cares if they do? My goodness, take a stand for your faith, right? That's the whole point of this thing. And man, if we can't take a stand for our faith in this place, how are we going to ever do it out there? So as Jacob sings, make it your prayer, let it sink into your heart. And if you need to, the altar's open. It's your space, your time. Jesus is here.